Good morning. All good here.
I always think about basketball. You know, I'm thinking about winning, and that's why I'm here. I'm not here to stay in the middle. You know, it's a result-driven business. I mean, you spend 3 times a day with Billy. Obviously, great leader, great coach, and I got to do a better job to help him.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely going to be conversations. You know, we'll sit down and talk, and they'll pick my brain, and I'll talk to them about stuff. That always happens, you know, and they've been really, really good, and I appreciate them. I want to be clear on this. Like, when the season starts, right, I am totally trying to invest everything I have into the team and into the group, you know, as best I can.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We are broadcasting live from the Performance Studio, and we're delighted to welcome in Arturis Karnišovas and Billy Donovan, the boss. And we kept teasing it as Breakfast with Billy. We've got breakfast over there, and it's really Billy the boss and breakfast. What do you think? That's what we're selling it for alliteration.
When I heard that, and I knew he was from Jersey, I thought Bruce Springsteen was going to be sitting next to me.
Well, AK, you're wearing your colors, man. That is kind of the national
look.
Gotta
explain the shirt.
Of the Lithuanian national team, right?
Gotta explain the shirt, though.
Yes, so basically, yeah, Nike came out a couple of years ago with this shirt that kind of reflected, you know, 1992 and 1996 and all the years that Lithuanian Olympic team was wearing, so I decided to put it on.
It's a T-shirt that any Deadhead could appreciate, though, right?
Yeah.
Actually, you know, this summer when Dead was at the Sphere, I've never seen Billy happier in my life when he went to see them live.
This summer?
Yes. And he came next day. I mean, he was absolutely shining, you know, the way he was describing how great was the concert. And I've never seen him happier.
What was it like, Billy?
Yeah.
Oh, it was a great experience. I had a chance to see them in Madison Square Garden in like 88, 89. And then they were in the Sphere when we were there for Summer League. And someone had called me, had tickets, and went to the show. It was great. So I really enjoyed it. He was just disappointed that he couldn't come. He got in a day later.
Very much.
Well, you were busy. Weren't you in Italy? Did you have some adventures abroad this summer?
I've done things that I've never done before, so you know, experiences that.
What prompted that?
Yeah,
was the season that bad?
I think, you know, I'm getting to that point where, like, you know, you live once, you try to experience certain things, and you know, certain, you know, experiences I didn't plan, but they happened, and I'm glad.
One example. What was one example this summer?
So when I went to Italy, you know, we were planning to go on a hike, and the translation, English translation, hiking and extreme rock climbing and mountain climbing kind of got lost there. So when we showed up with my wife, you know, to do hiking at Mountain Tavolata, two guides showed up with, you know, harnesses and carabiners and belays. I didn't have these words in my vocabulary before, but, like, you know, I'm like, what is going on right now? And what are we about to do? And 4 hours and 5 hours of that experience was like, I've never obviously done that before. I'm not trained, you know, so it was interesting experience.
And Billy, don't you always do some international travel just to keep up with some of your players, right? Everybody's living all over the world.
Yeah, this summer it didn't work out that way. A couple of years ago, I went over to Montenegro to see Vuč, but he was playing with the Olympic team there, so there was a lot of training going on there. So didn't make a trip overseas to see any players. I saw Goran Dragic, you know, that year as well, which was a great trip, but nothing overseas this season.
But did you get together with, I don't know, maybe Zach LaVine? Was that one of your trips?
Yeah, so like what ends up happening, for me at least, you know, we had probably about 5 days of summer league practice, and then we end up going to Vegas. And then after Vegas, I made a trip to L.A., spent some time with Zach, spent some time with Io, Kobe, Dalen, spent some time with Lonzo. They're kind of all, you know, relatively close to each other, so you know, we go out there and do that. And then, you know, a bunch of guys came down to Miami to work out, went down to Miami and visited with them there. So, you know, even though the trip wasn't necessarily overseas this summer, you're certainly going out at periods of time in the summer to visit with players and spend time with them.
And just that you were visiting with Zach, I think, is something that worth addressing now, because the pretty open dialogue last season about whether he would be coming back, what he decided to do with the surgery, all of the things. And now here we are on the brink of training camp, and Zach LaVine is coming back to Chicago, member of the Bulls. Could you just address how those conversations went in the off season, and the fact that he is back here now, how he fits into your plans this year?
Well, I mean, I've always enjoyed talking to Zach, and we've always had, you know, a relationship that we've been able to communicate. And, you know, like I said, anytime that, you know, we've needed to sit down and talk, he's always been very open-minded about that. I think, you know, when you're a player and you're going through an injury like he went through, and he's really disconnected, so to speak, from the organization, from the team, because he's doing his rehab. You know, it was right after the All-Star break that he had surgery. You know, naturally, you're going to want to know, okay, like, what direction are we going? How do I fit into this? All those kind of things. So it was really once the summer, once July started, it was more like he was, you know, back playing. He looks in really, really good shape. I think it's the first time, to be honest with you, in the last year or so that he's actually come back to training camp. If you remember, he came off knee surgery, so he looks a lot better. And then it's, you know, more about how we're trying to play, how he fits in, you know, those kind of things. And, you know, I think the big thing is, hey, we've got a lot of younger players. Are we going to go young? Are we going to go, you know, older? How is all this going to work? And we have open, honest conversations about it, and we talk about it.
Archer, there was an expectation that maybe he would be moved. There was a perception that maybe he wasn't able to be moved or traded because there wasn't a market for Zach LaVine. How would you address that?
Well, I think last season was very difficult for him, for organization, for everyone. And but like Billy said, you know, the last 2 years has been, you know, injured. It's very frustrating for a player. And now he's finally fully healthy. He looks great. We'll, you know, looking forward to seeing him in a training camp.
Is he still open to be traded? Are you open to trading him? And does he need to sort of rehab his reputation around the league because of the reason you spoke of, because of injury, coupled with his contract, etc.?
Well, you know, people forget that 2 years ago he was an All-Star.
Yep.
So, and he's an ultimate pro. He's a great guy, great person. He likes his teammates. So, again, I'm looking forward to seeing him in a training camp. And, you know, we have a vision how we want to play. You know, we've obviously spent this summer talking about it with Billy, and, you know, that we want to play more up-tempo, and he fits into that, and we'll see how that works.
So much curiosity about what style of play you will be with the new players. A lot of changes going on. Now you got Bezelis coming in as a draft pick, and you bring in Josh Giddey, who had a terrific Olympics, and you saw some of his capability. And you bring Zach, and you got Kobe White ready to take another step. How fun is it for you? This is almost like a lot of the same guys, but this feels like a reset to some degree because they're in different roles, or because DeMar DeRozan isn't here. Alex Caruso isn't here. Guys who maybe had played into those roles so well for so long, now you're kind of, it feels new.
Yeah, you know, Arturs and I, you know, speak all the time, but even, you know, coming out of last season and having to overcome, you know, the loss of players, so to speak, with Patrick Williams' situation, Zach's situation, Torrey Craig. There was just a lot of things that ended up happening. I think everybody knows the way Alex Caruso plays. He's so reckless. A lot of times his availability, you know, was up in the air. So, you know, I think last year I was pretty honest from the standpoint that, you know, we were not a team that was built to play really fast. We just weren't built that way. And I think, you know, as a coach, you always want to try to play to your player's strengths. And obviously, the job that DeMar did for the time that he was here was remarkable, and he was great closing out games and a total pro, and he was great with the younger players. I think as some of the roster has changed, there is a mix of younger players and there's a mix of some older players, and how well we can gel and mesh together. I think the other part is going through the experience in Oklahoma City when we had Chris Paul, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Dennis Schroeder. We played all those three guards together, you know, and I think when you look at our backcourt situation, we have some talented backcourt players, but they're only effective if the ball's in their hands, right? So what kind of sacrifices can we make individually, you know, where we're not going to have one guy with the ball in his hands all the time. We're going to have to be able to sacrifice and try to play to each other's strengths. I think the other part of that now is I think the way the team is constructed, with the mix of some older guys and some younger guys, we have to play faster. I think one of the things we've battled the last couple of years is, in some ways, and Arturs and I have talked about this, we've lost the analytical battle. You know, we just were not a high-volume three-point shooting team, and there was games we walked into where you've got teams that are taking an enormous amount of three-point shots, and we're not able to even keep up with that rate. And it's not so much about necessarily just bombing up three-point shots, but you don't want to be up against it on a continual basis, right, because you're just not generating enough of them. Because, listen, everybody, when you say DeMar DeRozan, they always say this mid-range killer, and he's unbelievable. It's a reason why he's going, right, to be a Hall of Fame player, is because that's what he does do. And you don't want to sit there and try to make a player be somebody he's not. So I do think that the tempo that Arturs and I have talked about, you know, over the summer, we've got to play that way. And we have, you know, you go back and hopefully he'll be able to get on the court. Lonzo, he's moving in that direction. But he was really a guy that enabled us to play faster, you know, moving the ball up the floor. I think the same thing can be said for Josh Giddey. You know, he's a guy that can really, really push the tempo. And he does it a lot with the advanced pass. And I think for those two guys, players love playing with them because they know if they run, they're going to find him.
And it's difficult, obviously, to play offense constantly against the set defense, you, mm-hmm, know. And when you pushing the ball, that's when you generate rim shots and open threes. And that's what we could try to get as many of those as possible. You know, after misses or after makes.
Lonzo hasn't played in so long. Mm-hmm. So, I just don't even know what that would look like. I'm sure you've got a good plan in place. There would seemingly have to be some kind of minutes limit or some sort of, you know, maybe natural days off within a comeback like that. It's been 2.5 years, basically.
He's been, you know, we've been talking to, you know, obviously to Zoe. He's excited about the training camp. But again, during the training camp, we're going to try to find out, you know, that the loads that he's going to have to take in training camp and the grind on a daily basis will depend his, you know, rotational minutes, you know, his role and you know, how much he's going to play. But he's been playing 5-on-5 since August, and he's been doing more. He had recently set back just because he got sick and he missed like a week and a half. But by training camp, he should be ramping up.
Do you envision him as a bench player? Do you envision him as a starter and controlled minutes? Because he's a guy who obviously, when healthy, and that's it's always dangerous to say when healthy because it has been so long. But do you think, or is this to be determined?
Well, I think the thing that Arturs mentioned, which is critical, we don't know how he's going to respond after games, after practice, because we haven't seen it, right? So that's where we first got to start off with, is where, you know, is it something where he plays 15 to 20 minutes and now he's got to take the next day off? Can he play 25 or 30 minutes? You know, how does he respond? You know, the back-to-backs? You know, we don't know, right, we don't know any of those things, so we're going to wait to find out. Now, I do think the one thing I look at it from this lens is Lonzo loves to play. He loves to play. And at his age, you know, as much as he loves to play, he wants to play beyond this year. So we, I think, also have a responsibility to make sure that he's in a position, you know, where he can play after this season, where it's not one of these things where, you know, it's not managed correctly or we're not putting him in a situation to be effective. Could that be 15 to 18 minutes a game? Maybe. Could it be 20 to 25? Maybe. There's just a lot of things. If you look at him as a basketball player, he's an elite point guard that certainly, you know, warrants being out on the court a lot. But is he capable of doing that physically? And those are things we just don't know right now. And until we get to training camp and he's out there, we'll have a better feel of how we can maybe manage him and allow him to be a productive player.
You know, it feels, maybe it's not true, that you're working at cross-purpose, that you're trying to do player development, you're trying to get young guys incorporated, and you have a lot of players that are back. Does that signify that you are going to be starting certain guys and then extending minutes through more guys than usual? Usually you'd like to go about 9 deep. You don't go much more than that. But does this mean you have to go 10 deep?
Well, I think one of the things that when people look at the development piece of a player, they only look at it through the lens of playing time. And right, they think, okay, the only way to develop a player is just throw him on the court, play him 35 minutes, let him make mistakes and figure it out from there. You've got to be able to, I think, help a young player in particular understand the things that really go into winning. and the things that go into being a successful player. Is playing time part of that? Sure. Adversity is also a huge part of that. How are they going to respond to tough games? You know, being exposed, not having the experience. I think for a young player developing a routine, you know, what do they do? How do they recover? You know, and this idea of, hey, listen, we're just going to take a bunch of young players, throw them out there, and then, you know what, just give them playing time. I think there's also things that development, you got to earn things too, you know, and I think our mentality and focus is we're going into every game trying to win. So when you look at a guy like Matas, yes, part of his development is being on the court, no question, but he also needs to develop a routine. He also needs to understand the league. He needs to understand who he's playing against. There may be a situation that Arturis and I sit down and maybe with the amount of minutes he's getting is, hey, listen, he needs to go down to the G League and get more minutes. Like the development part is so – it's such a bigger process than just, hey, go on the court, work on a shooting and ball handling, because the biggest thing that a young player has to deal with that's coming from where he's coming from or any young player coming from, you know, is the fact that there's a level of inexperience. There's a strength issue. There's a lot of things guys have to develop. So the development piece is critical. But also, what are the things that really go into winning? Because at the end of the day, you're trying to compete and win, and you want to help a player develop winning habits.
And as you're saying that, people are nodding their heads and agreeing with you because it all makes a lot of sense. And then the Bulls fans are thinking about, okay, where is Patrick Williams in that development? Because Patrick Williams went through a lot of the things that you just described, and he had to learn how to be a professional. He's 23 years old. This is his fifth season. But people talk about him like he's been in the league for 10 years. And yet his development, I think, he seems like, from the outside looking in, ready to take a step. Also needs to take a step to justify his draft status and what he means to this team.
Well, also, you know, let's not forget that he almost missed two seasons out of four.
Right.
You know, so he missed, you know, his second, and he had an injury last year. So, you know, he obviously worked extremely hard, you know, this summer to get back, and, you know, we're ramping him up right now, you know, for training camp. So it's going to be a important season for him. But, you know, when we are talking about us being younger, you know, you also look at, you know, Kobe, this is his sixth year. You know, Patrick is fifth. Ayo is fourth. Josh Giddey is fourth. You know, so we're young, but at the same time, you know, there's a lot of experience there. So, you know, again.
How far has Patrick come since you have been coaching him?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting what Arturis said, because I really felt when I first got here, I thought one of the most difficult things for three players in particular that they were not equipped and ready to handle was when Wendell Carter, you know, was maybe in his second year. Kobe was going into his second year. It was coming off of COVID. And then Lauri Markkanen. And it was like, okay, these guys are going to be the leaders in the future. They didn't have enough experience for that. But I think, like Arturis said, with Ayo, with Kobe, with Patrick, these guys now have got legitimate years of NBA experience under their belt. And I do think, from what Arturis said, some of the injuries has probably stunted that a little bit. But I do think Kobe's a way different leader than he was when I first got here, just through the experience. Same thing with Ayo. I think the same thing could be said for Patrick. You know, I think he's starting to understand a little bit more. But when you're talking about a player coming in as maybe the youngest player in the NBA, just to throw a guy out there. Now, some of it worked out roster-wise that he was given the opportunity to play quite a bit, right? But I do think he mentally has taken some growth and some development there on his part, that he's in a much, much better place in terms of understanding who he is as a player.
All right, it's Mully and Haw. We are broadcasting live from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois through it all. And special thanks to the fine folks at Schmaltz Deli, located on Ogden Avenue in Lyle. They are spreading some deli goodness. Well, they're spreading it everywhere, but today they're spreading it in here, and we appreciate it. And we're going to be right back. Want to talk about Kobe and about the step that he took and maybe the step in front of him. We'll do that when we return. Mully and Haw on the Score.
I feel like I'm just part of my growth overall, just getting better. As the season went on, I think one thing I need to work on, probably this offseason focus on, is probably just my conditioning. I don't think anything I could have done this past offseason would have prepared me for the amount of minutes and load that I had this year. For me, now, moving forward, I just need to work on my condition and make sure I'm prepared for anything coming into the season.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That's the voice of Coby White. And there was a little bed of dead music underneath that just to make everyone comfortable. So let's talk about Coby, because that was really one of the big stories. You decide to sign him. Minutes open up for him. Things happen in his favor. And he answers the bell. And the question would just be, is there another level there? Because we've seen him. I mean, the guy was like a childhood superstar in North Carolina. I think he was like the schoolboy leading
scorer. Still holds a record.
Yeah.
Scored by a high school player in North Carolina.
I mean, he can score. You know, he can do different things. But he just seems to be continually getting better as a player.
Yes. I mean, you know, Coby is obviously, first of all, he's a great teammate. And every summer he's getting better, right? So he committed the last two summers, you know, to his development. But not only that, like this summer he goes and invites teammates to work out with him. So he grew as a leader. He found his voice, you know, last year, and you know, and hopefully this year is going to take another step.
Yeah, I mean, he's. It's been really. We talked earlier about development,
yeah.
Right? Like there's things that he had to go through to put himself in this position. You know, there was a time there where, remember, we had some injuries and he was at the point guard position. Then he was off the ball. Then he was coming off the bench. Then he was starting. It was a difficult year, but he always did whatever needed to be done for the team. And I think maybe you heard him before we started speaking about what he learned this year.
Right.
And I think the one thing he learned was the endurance of a guy like Steph Curry, who can run around and move like that for the amount of minutes that he endures. And I think he talked about, I got to get into much better shape. I've got to be able to have much better stamina. Like, that's a development piece that when you look at it, he's not going to really know that unless he went through it. And I think he even mentioned beforehand, there's nothing I could have done to prepare for this, you know, but now he knows going into the summer. And I think, as our tourist mentioned, him trying to step up and lead and have a voice, all those things. He's a guy that has taken complete ownership of his career, his development, and what he's needed to do. And, you know, he's not a finger pointer at anybody. He always looks internally first. And, you know, he's grown into an incredible player. And now the next thing is, you know, when you look at our team, he's going to be probably in some of these situations at the end of games. And,
right.
And you know what? That hasn't been something he's done, but that's like another opportunity for development for him. And I do think that Coby can get to another level just because of his drive and his will to want to be the very, very best he can be.
And he likes to have the ball in his hands. So now the adjustment comes. Josh Giddey likes to have the ball in his hands. The offense goes through him, or maybe Lonzo Ball likes to have the ball in his hands. How do you think he will adapt to maybe being an off-the-ball kind of guy and still being the effective scorer that he was last year?
Yeah, I think for us, it's not so much of, you know, one guy having the ball the whole entire time. We're going to have to play in a way where we play a lot faster and decisions are made quickly, you know, and that doesn't necessarily mean that Coby needs to change who he is. You know, a guy like Josh Giddey has always been a pretty good advance passer up the floor. It may open up opportunities for Coby to run and catch it in transition and be able to make plays and do what he does. You know, but for Josh Giddey, for Lonzo, for Coby, for Io, for Zach, you know, you got guys that are, you know, I don't want to say they're ball dominant players, but they're most effective when the ball's in their hands. So, well, every guy out there is not going to have the ball in their hands. So they're all going to have to play off each other. And this is going to be a learning and growing process for this group playing together, you know, for the first time. But the mentality of a guy like Coby is he wants to win and he's competitive. So he'll kind of figure out, you know, how he can still stay true to who he is.
So how hard is it for you at this stage of your career? You've been doing it forever, but to get the guys that you just described to not bring their egos into the equation, because what you just talked about requires, you know, being team first, not you first. And I think sometimes that can be a challenge depending on the player.
Yeah, I mean, what you do is it starts in the summer. You know, you're sitting down, you have meetings with three or four guys at a time. You talk about, hey, how do you guys see this? This is what I think. And then you kind of work together. I think they're all smart enough and bright enough to understand as they look at each other, like, you know, someone's just not going to have the ball. The problem is when you get into a situation where one guy has the ball all the time and now all of a sudden not everybody's being utilized. So you could have a situation, just, you know, a positive situation where a guy like Jack Skitty gets the ball and throws it up to Kobe. Kobe drives down the lane and all of a sudden he throws it to Zach. Zach shoots a three. You know, like,
right.
That's how we're going to have to try to do things. And they're all going to have to be able to understand that they all can generate offense, but they got to generate offense inside of what we're doing and then try to utilize that to make each other better.
Tell us a little bit about Jalen Smith and how you envision using him. This is a guy you picked up in free agency, and he's got a role on this team, especially with Vooch and the way he plays. This is a different style of player.
So we envision, obviously, he's so versatile. Just to watch him play pick up games, you know, he can block the shot. Then at the other end, he comes and he makes a three. Then the next possession, he gets an offensive rebound, put back. Like, he's very efficient, very gifted player. And that's, you know, we'll see how we can, you know, incorporate his skill set into, you know, our team. But, you know, I'm very excited about him as a player because he can do so many things.
Defensively, how will you stop people? Because I think that's a big concern when you lose Alex Caruso, you lose Andre Drummond, you lose guys who traditionally are known for their defense. They're not here any longer. You have some nice pieces, then they fit together offensively. You worry about who's going to get the shots and who's going to take that. But defensively, I think if you're going to the offseason, from my perspective, that might be your number one concern.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge for us, you know, and I think that, you know, it for us, mentioning, you know, losing a guy like Alex, and even, you know, Lonzo has always been a very, very elite defender. Hopefully, you know, him coming back will help with that. But we're going to have to do it by committee in terms of, you know, whether it's we're in mismatch situations, you know, trapping the post. We're going to have to probably try to be a little bit creative to try to cover for each other in certain situations. I think Vooch has done a good job, you know, being able to, with his IQ, mix up coverages that he's in, and he's pretty smart doing that. You know, I think for us, we're going to have to protect the paint, you know, and provide support behind him as much as we can. And then I think the big factor and probably the number one thing defensively that you always try to look at is how well you can contest and challenge shots, you know. So, you know, certainly for us, we're going to have to put a huge emphasis on that, you know, as a group. And it can't just be, hey, Alex is here, let's throw him on this right. guy and he can right. shut him down. We're going to have to do it by committee.
I'm very curious about what the changes in the college game mean to AK, to your drafting, to your, you see this NIL stuff and you see the amount of money that some players are getting. Will they stay in college longer? Is there still the rush to get to the NBA? And I mean, it's really kind of amazing that Bouzelis didn't go for the money, went to the G League. I mean, you would expect that the amount of money available to players, my God, Billy, you would have made a fortune back in the day.
Well, we're still learning, you know, how NIL is going to impact, you know, basketball, you know, community, you know, our market. It also impacts, you know, international talent, you know. You know, a lot of young guys from Europe come to play here in college. And so we're still learning how that's going to impact. In terms of college, obviously, you logically think that they're going to stay longer just because, you know, the NIL money is there,
yeah.
You know, and when you don't have anything guaranteed, when you commit to getting drafted and coming to a league, then you're just going to take a sure thing. So I think that's going to impact us. So, you know, it's still wait and see, but, you know, today's, you know, talented players, they have options.
Billy, my perception would be that as a college coach, you would use the outside noise maybe more to your advantage to motivate players. They're younger and maybe more prone to react to those kinds of things. I don't know how it is with professionals, but there's not a lot of expectations around this Bulls team this season. You look at the over-under in Vegas and 28 victories or whatever the case may be coming off last season. Do you use that as fuel? Do you refer to that at all as you guys get ready to gather for another training camp, go off to a season into full of unknowns? Do you use the fact that people are doubting whether or not you're going to be any good?
Well, I think everybody has pride, you know, in terms of wanting to go out there. Our team is, you know, going to be different this year. You know, the one thing I really appreciate and respect about Arturas from the get-go has been, you know, building, you know, a winning culture. And this is kind of almost in a certain way a reset. I don't want to say a total start over because we have certainly players back from the past couple of years. But, you know, it's a situation where can we establish an environment, a culture, you know, a foundation of how we need to play and also – you know, try to do the things and set into motion the things that we have to do that impacts winning on a daily basis. You know, you mentioned the defensive part. You're not going to be good by just going down and trying to outscore people. You know what I mean? You've got to be good on both ends of the floor. That's part of the development. What are the things that go into winning? So I think all these guys are incredibly prideful, and, you know, we all want to be competitive. And, you know, this is not a situation where it's like, hey, we're just going to play all these young guys and just see what happens. And this is how, like, we're talking about really trying to develop everything, develop the young players. You know, can the older guys like Vooch and Zach and Torrey Craig and Javon Carter help in the leadership and the growth and development, invest in some of our young guys? You know, will our young guys understand that, hey, listen, the importance of being professionals, being ready? You know, you're coming at a situation where you've been the most talented, the most gifted player. Now you're not. Now there's a learning curve. How much humility do you have to want to learn? Like, all of these things, I think, are going to be on the table for us. But I do feel like going, you know, to start this season, we've got to be all in terms of how we need to play and in terms of doing the things that really go into winning.
And, you know, also we're going to put emphasis on obviously bringing the home court advantage back, because even last year we had, you know, a losing record at home. And that shouldn't happen, especially we have to make this place a hard place to play. And yeah, and that's why we try to stick to our principles, and the players that, you know, have good work ethic, you know, physical, you know, culture, you know, movers. And we just recruit certain players that, you know, fit what we're trying to build here.
All right, we're going to be right back with AK and Billy. You're listening to Mully and Haw on The Score. We're going to listen to dead music now for the rest of our lives. It's Mully and Haw. We are broadcasting live from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. Billy Donovan is here. Arturas Karnišovas is here. Schmaltz's Deli is here serving food. And guys, a lot of fun to just have the start of a season. I mean, there's so much going on. I'm just curious, did you spend any time watching the Olympics? Do you like Olympic basketball? Did you like seeing the U.S. team? Did you like having some guys that were involved in the Olympics? Do you think that's a good experience for players?
I mean, I'm always nostalgic about Olympics. I love Olympics. That's my, you know, favorite event. And obviously, you know, go back to 92, 96. I had an opportunity to play for Lithuanian national team. But, I mean, this, you know, Olympics, I watched every sport. It was available. It was great, you know, televised, streamed each sport. And it was just, loved the opening, you know, the ceremony. Obviously, again, going back to, you know, when they used to just walk around the stadium and opening ceremonies. It's just a special event that unites all world, you know, just to for sports event.
At one point, did you scout for Team USA for Mike Krzyzewski?
I did for the World Cup 2014, not Olympics. But yeah, for a couple of years, I worked with the USA basketball kind of while I was in Denver to help him out a little bit with scouting. Yep. Yes, I did.
That was kind of fun to see the U.S. win that thing. It was worrisome, though, because it was closer than I thought it would be, and especially France could be a dangerous team moving forward. What the heck was that?
Well, the evolution, you know, as of basketball and how every, you know, the world caught up to U.S. and, you know, seeing 37, I think, NBA players play in Olympics, it was really good competition and close games, and it was great to watch.
Let's talk about the Eastern Conference. Parity is everywhere in the Eastern Conference, and as much as we could talk about what you guys do well and what you need to work on, how much of that parity gives you hope this season, because you can be a team that, you know, you stick around depending on what your goals are, but there's a lot more parity, it seems like, than ever.
That gives you a chance, right? But for us, it's like, you know, you got to start, you know, from training camp trying to figure it out, you know, with this new group, guys coming back from injuries, new faces, and how that all is going to work. Because a lot of players that, you know, going to have certain responsibilities and roles, they've never had them before. So it's going to be good to see in training camp, and we're going to have to take, you know, one game at a time in terms of expectations and see where we're at.
Billy, you like the Eastern Conference? Do you worry that that this particular group of teams, you know, I mean, Boston seems to sit alone atop those standings and obviously won the title. But it's a the conference itself, the division, doesn't look overwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, the way I always look at it, right, the schedule comes out, you're playing 82 games,
right?
And the schedule is what it is. And to me, you know, the one thing you know is that, like, every night is a challenge. Doesn't make a difference who you're playing against. If you don't come ready, these guys are professional athletes as well. So I think our focus, as Arturis mentioned, has got to be on ourselves. What are the things that we have to do? And certainly, you know, Philadelphia getting Paul George, and you know about Milwaukee, you know, with another year of that group under their belt. You know, you talked about Boston. And then I think there's probably a lot of teams trying to find, you know, like we are, an identity and how they're going to play and how guys are going to gel and mesh together. And, you know, for us, I think we just need to worry about us and what we've got to do and how we need to play and the things we've got to commit to on a daily basis.
Organizationally, how will you handle the rhetoric surrounding the team? Because if you are as good as you want to be, then maybe you jeopardize that protected top 10 or that pick with that you have, and there's, you know how pro sports works, you know how it works in a sports city like Chicago. So what is the approach, and how will you answer those questions?
Well, the approach, again, going into training camp, and then depends how the things work out in training camp. Now we're going to approach every game, you know, and we're going to try to win every game. And because, you know, going back to, you know, development is like what goes into winning, and that's the only way you can teach those guys, you know, how to win games, is, you know, going through that, and with a lot of things to be determined. I think training camp will show a lot of things.
All right, we got a special guest, believe it or not, now joining us on the Arturo Tire Hotline. Arturo, your hometown tire, Arturo.com, is none other than Joakim Noah, famous Bulls player. Near MVP with the Bulls, but certainly a championship winner with Philly and Florida. Joakim, welcome to the show.
What's going on, guys? What's going on?
Wow. Thanks for joining us. Wow, what are you up to these days?
Well, I just wanted to give some love to my old ball coach, and I had a few questions for him. I'm calling from the deep jungles of Africa, you know, hunting lions out here, and just taking the time to call into the radio show and see if Coach was going to have the five men at the top of the press and just play some real run-and-gun, Billy the Kid-style basketball.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have someone with his athleticism. We used to put him on the ball at Florida in front of the press, and he was a nightmare. But he is one of my favorite guys I've ever coached, and just an incredible teammate. Great, great human being, and you know, it's been great to be in Chicago where he certainly did so much, and then he comes back through with his foundation and stuff. So you never know where he's at. It could be Hawaii, it could be Africa. You never know. You never know where he could be at.
Where are you,
Joakim? I have a quick question. So sure. When you get a defensive, when the big man gets a defensive rebound, are you going to let him bring the ball up the court? Tell me a little bit.
Well, you know, it was interesting with him and Horford when I had both those two guys. Yeah. It was a little bit unique. I let those guys rebound and bring it on the break, which is always a little bit different because, you know, in college they would always send the guards back for floor balance. So these guys were always coming down the floor racing it. But Joakim, I don't know if we've got anybody like that on our team. We'll probably be outletting to the point guards this year.
Okay. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. Just wanted to let you know I was just hanging out with your boy, Numb Nuts, a.k.a. Torian Green.
Good. And, keeping him in line, I hope.
He was still really mad about that, the fact that you didn't let him come back to the ball as a point guard.
Listen, with you and Al, the way you guys handled the ball, we needed to get him up the floor. He fails to realize that on that Florida team, no one knows this, he took more shots than you, Brewer, and Al. Can you believe that? He took more shots than all three of you guys. You guys were all lottery picks, and we got this guy's taking all the shots.
I hope he hears this. I hope he hears this.
Yes.
So what, Coach, what are you most excited about with this year?
You know, just the start of the season, for one. I think, too, how we can try to play, you know, with our current personnel. I think we've got some backcourt players that, you know, can really help us force tempo and force pace. I think we can play a lot faster. I'm looking forward to that. I think we got a really good group of guys that will work. We had most of our guys, Joe Kim, in Miami because during the Democratic Convention, our place was shut down. Mostly all the guys were in Miami for a week. And then we've had a lot of guys come back right after Labor Day to work out. So I think it's a good working group. I think that they know there's going to be some challenges and some sacrifices that we've got to make. But as a whole, in terms of the people that we have, I feel really good about them.
Any more questions, Joaquin?
No, I'm just really looking forward to coming and see you guys during the year. You know, I always cherish the time, spending some time with Coach Donovan and talking after the games and talking basketball and talking strategy. You know, that's always one of my favorite things to do in the year. So I know the expectations are not high, but I know that you're going to come in right now and just make us proud, Coach.
I appreciate you. You know, I love you.
I love you too, man.
Great stuff, Joaquin. Thank you, buddy. Thank you for a great career with the Bulls, too. Man, I'll never forget that year.
Bulls team ambassador. Billy, though, when you look back at that Florida team, which would have been higher? If that NIL existed, which would have been higher, the payroll for that team or the first NBA team you coached?
Well, you know, people don't realize this. So when those guys won the national championship, they were all lottery picks. And Joe Kim, after his sophomore year, was projected as the first player taken in the draft. And everybody says to me, like, what did you do from a sales standpoint to get all these guys to come back? Like, how'd you get them to come back? And the reality was, the only guy in that class that could not go pro and was not going to get drafted was Torian Green. And Joe Kim and Corey Brewer and Al Horford, they all made a pact that they were not going to leave him out to dry in his career. So when people ask me why did those teams win, that's what goes into winning. That, like, you're talking about sacrificing, and I'm not saying that everybody needs to do that in order to win, but it speaks to their character in terms of, if we leave, this guy's going to be left with a team that's not going to be very good, and what's going to happen to his career? You know, they used to give him a hard time all the time when he wasn't working hard. Like, you got one more year and that's it. We're out of here. You know, but then they came back and did it again. But that was the reason why they came back. And you think about in Joe Kim, the character of bypassing being the number one pick and going back for your teammate.
Worked out well in the draft for him and the Bulls.
No, it was a perfect situation for him here, and he was great. And I knew he'd be great wherever he went, but just the integrity and the character of competition and winning and being a teammate is incredible.
Did you help him pick out that suit he wore on draft night?
I couldn't even tell you half the outfits he had while he was on campus. You know.
Hey, gentlemen, thank you so much. Really appreciate it, Billy AK. Really appreciate your time. Thanks, everybody. We appreciate our chance to get down here into the Blue Cross Blue Shield performance stage, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois through it all. And, of course, special thanks to the fine folks at Schmaltz Deli for providing breakfast for us and our listeners this morning. Check out Schmaltz Deli and Lyle, spreading deli goodness everywhere. Mully and Haw on Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.